Hi, this is Rick Ryle.
And Kurt Ryle.
From the Grip Weeds. Welcome to the second episode of our podcast series, Vibrations from the House of Vibes.
Rick and I are not only musicians and members of the Grip Weeds, we are self-taught recording engineers and producers. In each episode, we'd like to talk about what's going on with the Grip Weeds, of course, but also how we got into recording in the first place, how we set up our own studio, House of Vibes, and tips and techniques from our many years as engineers and producers.
We hope to bring you many fun and interesting episodes about the band and our approach to recording. And from time to time, we'll have guests on the show. But let's get on with episode two, How to Be a Band in a Pandemic. Well, Kurt, this is going to be a bit of a historical timepiece. 2020 is going to be one of the most famous years of all time. And we will be talking about the COVID pandemic and what we all did to get through it for years to come.
The arrival of COVID-19 in the United States in early spring of 2020 has caused a huge upheaval in our culture, caused hundreds and thousands of deaths, forced us into lockdown, physically separated us from friends and coworkers and our musical compatriots, and resulted in a huge disruption in businesses across the country and the world.
Yeah, and I think it's especially been hard on musicians in the music business. With most live venues being closed, many musicians are having a hard time making a living. A lot of them were earning most of their income from live performance, and that hasn't been possible. So we're going to discuss in this podcast, if you're a band or an artist, what can you do right now to maintain contact with your audience and to keep going? It's been a bitch of a year, wouldn't you say?
You could say that again. It's been a challenge in just about every way possible, I would say.
Hey, do you think this might be the most famous year in history? I mean, think about it. What's a more famous year than 2020?
Well, I would say there have been worse or equally hard years in our history. But I think because we've got the technology to document it so well, and people really can communicate their suffering or their struggle.
Right.
You know, you've got an information base on a scale that just wasn't there in 1918, you know?
That's true. Yeah.
So, I mean, the suffering was huge, maybe even worse in 1918, but we have this connection. Thank God we have the internet to sort of still connect us when we can't be physically connected. But that is the problem. As a musician in this sort of situation where you're in a contact business and music is made by connection, how do you do that when you can't physically be connected?
Yeah, you know, it's like the restaurant industry also facing unbelievable hardship. We are lucky that there are some means to overcome these obstacles. So what are some of your ideas for operating as a band in this time?
Well, I mean, everything is born out of necessity because I think, you know, as a band, the main idea here is to put out your art and to, which is essentially an energy, and to put that out and get it to the audience, connect with your audience. And that is easier when you can go and play a show. And you can get people to come to the show and they go, wow, you know, and there's a give and take of you know, a shared thing that you get when you play live. That's easier when you can do that. When you can't do that, then you have to resort to the other methods, like, you know, making a record, which is what we're doing, doing a virtual show, doing using the internet to communicate, you know, all those things. They help keep that, not only the connection with the audience, but really it's kind of holding the band together. A band needs to work. A band needs to have that focus. And if you go off in your respective corners, it's harder to maintain a band focus where we work together. It's a challenge, you know, but that's what I believe we're trying to do.
Well, you're talking about energy, which I really like, your viewpoint that way. It's almost like a Zen approach. It's like looking beyond just the surface level. When all is said and done, it's looking to me like this is going to be a year experience, this COVID-19. I mean, there's a vaccine that's coming out, but let's face it, it'll be till the summer probably before we're operating normally again. I'm going to, hopefully we are operating normally by the summer. But when all is said and done, this will be a year out of normality.
Yeah. And not only that, you know, we as musicians or actors, live, you know, theater people and dancers and whoever, you know, we will probably be the last to get back to playing, to enjoying the live experience.
Yeah.
Because that's going to take confidence of people to feel confident to, you know, do those things that aren't necessarily essential, but that you have to have that confidence in our cure that people will go, okay, I feel confident enough to go out and stand shoulder to shoulder with people that I'm not going to get sick and I can enjoy the music. And that's going to take a while.
That said, there's going to be a ton of people who are just dying to get out and see live performances again.
I think you're right. I think that this is a waiting game for us now because I believe the audience will be there for us when the smoke clears. Because people, I think, myself included, I'm a fan of music, and I know you guys see a lot of plays and things.
Sure.
And I'm starved to go and see a live event, you know, and just feel that energy. And, you know, so I think the audience will be there in spades, you know. And I think that it's almost as if this 2020 has given us a little bit of a lesson in a way. You know, the world was turning very virtual. And is still up to this point. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, you know, you don't have to go. You can just stay at home and just do it virtually. And yes, that's true. But what you lack is that energy that you feel in the contact and just the vibe of the feel of the music coming off the stage and the visuals is an experience that you just can't duplicate in your own home, you know?
Well, you know who said that on Twitter just the other day?
Who?
The Cross.
Well, there you go. He's right.
Someone asked The Cross, well, why don't you just do a virtual show? And The Cross said he doesn't like it because there's no audience. I mean, there's an audience, but you don't feel the audience. So it actually affects the way you perform.
A studio energy is different from a live energy. You don't in the studio, as you know, we don't have, other than ourselves, we don't have the audience. So we're relying on something else, some other energy. Maybe we're dialed into the song in a certain way to record it. But when you're playing live, you are feeding off that audience, and the audience is feeding off of your energy that goes back and forth. It's that exchange that is not something that you can achieve in a virtual setting.
Okay, well, you've been talking about what we're missing out on, which is valid, but let's go back to your approach, the Zen approach and the energy approach. Let's talk about what we can do with this.
Yes.
Because there are positive things about this experience, not people getting sick. That's not positive. But everything is basically stopped as we knew it for a year. And as much as nobody ever wants to do that, there are benefits because you're forced to stop your routine and look into yourself and, all right, what else can I do?
Yes.
And for musicians, I think for actors in theater, it's harder. But for musicians, this is an opportunity for a musician or a band to go back to the drawing board and woodshed and create new material and get better on their instruments and write new songs and sort of say, okay, what can we do in this time that when we do have a normal time again and we do come back, we'll be able to show some growth and development.
Right on, brother. The word of advice that I would give to every musician, whether you're in a band or not, but especially in a band, is keep that focus. Don't lose that energy. Don't lose the plot and just dissipate all of your work because you can't do one thing. There's plenty now with technology. Technology has enabled us to do so much that we couldn't do before. And whatever it takes to move that ball down the field in terms of, you know, your creativity and your message to the world, really.
Right.
it's a chance and an opportunity to do that, and it's still there. It's just a matter of getting creative with it, and that's a good thing.
You know, I've really thought of this period as a chance for me to study all kinds of things.
Yeah.
To get better on my instrument and practice more on my instruments. Because
I wish
I play
you would.
Keyboards. So I make guitar practice, keyboard practice, things like that, vocal practice, much more of my routine because I can't go out as much. So a lot of my work is in the home. So I do that, looking forward to the time when I will be going out again. Hopefully I'll come out a better musician. So using that time to improve your musicianship. How many people don't like to practice?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't.
I like to rehearse. I enjoy that. So I'm not one of those people. But there are many bands like that that don't want to rehearse because, you know, they don't want to lose that moment and not have it received. But, you know, that now's not the time for that, I don't think. I think now's the time to prepare for that day when the call comes or the email or whatever it is when they say, we need you to do this show. And it's, you know, it's a good one. It's one of the good ones. It's in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, when that call comes, you want to be ready. And if you're not ready, then you got a lot of work to do. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a good idea to you know, to keep those skills sharp. And I think that's one part of what to do in a pandemic. But I think, you know, the other things to do in a pandemic are to communicate with your audience because the audience is out there. You could even say the audience might even have a little more free time now to engage in what you're doing. So you have a captive audience right now. So how do you connect with them? And it better be something good because the rules always apply with entertainment or anything of interest. If it's not of interest, they're going to tune out. So it has to be good. You can't just go out there and, you know, do some little thing in your underwear and expect people to be watching for hours. You better make it good and make it compelling, you know, and that's the challenge. Always is.
That's really good. Really good point. So let me just summarize before we get into anything specific. What do we do in these times? Now we've already said you can practice more, write new material, obviously record.
Yeah, and as you know, I mean, the recording has been made a little bit easier now that more people have access to software and stuff to record on a certain level. So you shouldn't be looking at anything to stop you at this point.
Well, along with what I said about I myself have been studying a lot of things, I would definitely urge and inspire anyone who's listening who's a musician. Now is the time for you to learn to use recording software, experiment with recording yourself, do things that maybe some of you might have been a little reluctant to do because you didn't think you had the technical know-how. You know, experiment with this now because there's an incredibly flexible world for the recording musician right now. Ivy and I are working with an English musician named Mark Mortimer, who is also working with members of Circulus and Peter Daltrey from the 60s band Kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
And Allison O'Donnell from the 70s band Mellow Candle. So we're working through the internet, we're just adding parts to their stuff. But this
sure
wouldn't have been possible 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been doing that as well. I did work with the Gold Needles from, you know, England, who needed some drums and some vocals. And I just finished an album with them that's coming out on Gem Records, actually. The band's the Gold Needles. And I just did a bunch of work with them remotely, and they loved it, thank God. But yeah, you know, we couldn't quite do that before.
Well, the remote work ties into what we're talking about. If your band can be together physically and work together in one room, if that's possible, that's, of course, preferable.
Sure.
That might be possible. I mean, we were able to do that at times in this period. But, you know,
yeah,
for some people that, because of quarantine or whatever, trying to get enough technical ability that you can actually work the software basically so that you can record a part and send it to your bandmates. and start sharing Correct. Your music and at least develop your music and your new songs, at least to a point. Then you're using your time very well if you do that.
Right. Again, it's don't let it stop you. Find a way. And when we first learned of the pandemic back in March, if you remember, we had planned to do an album. And
don't we always, though?
Well, we do, but we had planned to start recording in March. And it was kind of that situation where, nope, I don't think I can make it, because at that point, we didn't know the pandemic, the COVID-19 was a new novel virus. So they didn't know all of the...
Didn't know the extent of what was about to happen.
Yeah, it wasn't clear what was going on. So it was kind of like, well, wherever you are, shelter in place. And so that meant you and it meant Dave couldn't participate in what became the basic tracks for our new album, which Kristen and I did. And so now we're, as the Gripweeds are, working on a brand new record, and we're filling out the tracks now in a variety of ways. We're doing as we are with you, Rick. We're doing a combination of virtual sessions, but also we're doing some in person. You know, where we're distancing, and you know, Dave comes in and does bass parts, and he's wearing a mask, and he's standing on the other side of the room.
Sure.
You know, and things like that. So we're making it happen as best we can.
But we're also using the time, because this is a great time to write songs, demo them, teach your band members the new songs, you know, start to develop new material. Because a lot of times, I think if you're a band that works a lot and is lucky enough to perform and play live out a lot pre-pandemic, the opportunity to overhaul your set and work in new material is more difficult.
Yeah.
So now you should be stockpiling your material, get a whole album's worth of material, learn some songs that you haven't played that you wanted to play, learn some new covers if you want to do some covers. You could really revamp your whole set so that when you get out there, or your show or whatever it is.
Right, right.
So when you get out there, you have something to show people that you've got something new.
So it's like, yeah, it's you're planning for the future, which is always a good idea. It's like putting money. It's like, you know, Dad used to tell us, to put some money in the bank,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Spend money, but put some in the bank. So that's the equivalent of putting money in the bank. But you still have to live a little bit, you know. So I would say the live a little bit would be continuing the conversation with your audience. Like, we put out the stay at home video, for Pete's sake, stay at home.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Where we all like put our parts together. And
I like to add that for when we did For Pete's Sake, the official Peter Tork Facebook page, which I believe is still going even after Peter passed away, they really liked it. They gave us a really nice feedback on that.
That's cool. For us, I think it was a natural to do that song, you know, in a setting where we couldn't be in the same room, you know, and it just felt like, I don't know, for Pete's sake, stay at home, you know, is a good, message.
Like you said, it was an opportunity to use the at-home experience to connect with fans. And that gets me to another one of your points here, which is staying in contact with the fans. It's a good time to learn how to use the social media to its maximum effect.
Yeah, that's true. That's it. And as I said before, you know, there's a lot of people out there now that are spending more time on social media because they have a little more, call it, free time.
With the virtual performances, but actually you can take those virtual performances to another level. I'm actually thinking about a video that The Doors did. I believe it was on Canadian television in 1968. It was Love Me Two Times and When the Music's Over. I think they were in a television studio with no audience.
Well, if you remember, we did that when we went to Spain. Remember that? We went to Spain. We did that Radio 3.
Yes, I do.
But it was TV, and there was a paid audience, if I remember. Remember that?
Yeah, I do. I haven't seen that video in the longest time.
Seems like a dream. But I know it's out there.
Do you have a copy of it?
I've seen it, yeah. It's out there. And actually, I do have it. It's something that we'll want to get out
Well, since we're talking about it, we might want to see that.
That's coming. Everyone who likes the Gripweeds, if you like, that was, I think we were touring around the time of Summer of a Thousand Years.
Yes, I think so.
So I think, you know, when we finally get to reissue that record, that's going to be something in it.
That might be the one we haven't done.
So far, yeah.
My point about the Doors was I was always struck by how great they are in that video performance. You know, not only Morrison, of course, but the whole band is really compelling, and there's no audience, which almost stands the feedback thing on its head. But what it means for a band now is if you have the opportunity to do an internet performance, you might want to take this opportunity to film yourself, or in other words, don't put it out live, but do your performance and then look at it. And see how it is, and you'll learn a lot about yourself as a performer.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Yeah,
like wow, that's how we're presenting this, or maybe we should change our format or change where we stand or how we're putting something over, because you're under the microscope.
Yeah,
like you are with recording, and the Doors really knew how to put their music over visually. Even with no audience.
Yeah, but that's a good observation, and one that I think that I will take you up on for the next Gripweeds virtual performance.
Thank you.
We'll do a test.
Yeah. You know, because the virtual performance can be edited.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be, you can edit it and then broadcast it.
That's right.
Be treated not unlike making an album.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that was interesting about the virtual show that we did over Memorial Day weekend. We had that opportunity to do that, and we went, if you remember, we went to our satellite studio in upstate New York.
I love that studio.
We had a good time. We had a good time making that, doing that show, and there was the lesson learned to me was we had a good number of people that saw that show live. But then there was a huge number of people that saw that show in delay, that saw it after, and were drawn to it after it was performed. So that's a case to do something and consider it a little bit more.
Hey, why don't we play a track from that performance?
Oh, yeah, sure. That'd be a good idea.
You got one in mind? Pick one and surprise me.
Okay.
Go!
So, Rick, when we were recording the new album here in the last couple weeks ago, I got to talk to Dave DeSantis, our bass player.
Ah.
And I got to talk to Kristen.
Great.
About this very topic. So let's dip into those.
Let's do.
This is Kurt Ryle from the Gripweeds, and I'm talking with Dave DeSantis, the bass player of the Gripweeds. And Dave, I just wanted to ask, we're in the process of making a new album now. How do you think the COVID-19 pandemic has changed the way you come up with your parts, the way you work in the Gripweeds, really?
Well, due to the pandemic, I couldn't be around for the basic track sessions, which thinks there was a stay-at-home rule going on. I adhered to that.
We did the stay-at-home video for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
That was right in the... Really, we were still all in lockdown, and we really couldn't get together in any way.
Yeah, that was prime stay-at-home point, yep.
So what was that like from your perspective?
I've never done Zoom or anything, so my fiancé had to help me with that. I think there were 5 attempts before we got it caught on video. That was a challenge. I hope we don't have to do that anymore.
Being a bass player in a band, being in a band as a musician, what do you think has changed the most for you?
Direction on what the writer wants. It's great to be
for your parts?
Yep, for my parts. It's great to be with them at the moment. And so I'm doing the homework and coming in. I know things will be adjusted and changed.
And we're also, we're all wearing masks in the studio.
Wearing masks.
Right. So, yeah. And we're 6 feet and more apart from each other. So,
yeah, you know. there's a time I got a demo, and for about a month, I've put my way on it, and to come in to record it later.
I just turned the whole thing upside down.
It's hard. You're brainwashed with your own way. And when things are changed, like at the spot, it's like, holy cow. Holy crap. I think I'm getting better at it.
You're very good at it. There's no doubt.
Good, good. I keep thinking Bruce Foxton. I think Weller made him do that all the time.
He did. Well, yeah. I didn't know that. Yep. So I don't feel so bad about pushing you around.
No. It is always for the good. Unbelievable. It's working.
We're doing the best we can to keep moving. Do you have any advice for a band out there to function now? How do you do it?
Be careful. Just have the mask on and your Sani gel with you. It's a giant challenge.
Yeah, that's true. We're talking with Kristen Pinnell Ryle, my wife and member of the Gripweeds. Kristen, working in a pandemic in a band, what's changed?
Well, we've always had a unique situation that we have a recording studio. That for us has not really changed, except when the pandemic hit, it was just you and me, Kurt. We had to go do all the basic tracks for our next record, which was, we decided to take advantage of the time and the enforced isolation. Normally, basic tracks in a studio means that you're going to lay down the basic parts of the songs and you're going to, how we usually do it, is we usually have the drums, the bass, some rhythm guitar, and a scratch vocal, and you get down a basic formation and we build off that.
So we did get half of that.
The two of us
were able to work that way. We kind of had an edge on the pandemic that probably a band without siblings wouldn't have.
And we've been able to continue working. And it's actually because we're enforced isolation, we can actually concentrate and we're not distracted as much by other things. I mean, it's kind of scary, but, we're home working. So we can focus. It's interesting because I could say because of the COVID, live performing is very exciting, but it's also very chaotic and it's difficult and there's traveling. Yeah. And I didn't mind having a break from that. I'm an artistic person. I'm going to be artistic whether, I'm shoved in a situation where I can record or not. So I just,
right.
There's ways to express yourself in other ways. And hopefully the musicians that can't tour and they can't record are just keeping their creativity and their spirits up. The biggest thing that worries me is live venues closing. I know there's recently been a bill that was passed through Congress, Save Our Stages, I think it was called. Mm. It's still sitting in the Senate from what I hear.
Yeah, they got to fix
but
that.
But so many, it's to play live, we're going to have to rethink that, I think, when this thing's over. There's a million things you could do. You can practice your instrument. You can learn a new instrument.
You can work on
your songs. You can fix up your equipment. There's a thousand things that you can do that probably had let go because you were going to concerts and playing live shows, which take a lot of energy.
Someone on social media said that, you know, all the musicians are now getting themselves in really good shape because they can't.
I am every day. I exercise every day. I'm out cycling.
Well, I think a good project is, you know, what's really helping us keep the focus of the band.
Those were some great points. I'm glad you got them on to this episode.
Yeah.
Hey, the next thing I want to talk about today is, you know, it's that time again.
What time is that?
It's 3 o'clock. No, it's Christmas time.
The holidays.
I know it's going to be not a typical Christmas, but you can still try to enjoy the season as best you can. And I think one of the ways to enjoy it is with the Gripweeds Christmas album. What's the name of that album again?
It's called Under the Influence of Christmas. And you know, I was just thinking of a couple of those songs today, in fact, and I realized something. A couple of the things that I wrote for that record, I wrote a song called "For the Holidays."
Hey, you know, I was gonna bring that up, but before we bring up any particular song,
yeah,
you know, I just want to say that you were very much the driving force behind that project.
Yeah,
and. Yeah. At the time, I might not have been so into it.
You like it now.
There's a reason for that. Because many Christmas albums, not all, but there are a lot of Christmas albums which are, shall we say, kind of corny.
Yeah.
Mawkish, sugary, overly sentimental. The same old Christmas standards reworked over and over. And I'm not singling any particular one out, and I'm not saying they're all bad, but there's a lot of them where it's like, oh, it's just this person doing Frosty the Snowman,
yeah,
or Silent Night for the 100th time, and, you know.
It's kind of industry product is what you're talking about.
But what I will say about the Gripweeds Christmas album, which I really like, is it's not that. We managed to...
No.
It's still a rock album. A lot of the songs we did weren't those typical. We didn't do Silent... Did we do Silent Night?
No, we did not.
No, we didn't. You know, so... And we did a number of... And this is going to lead me into talking about the songs. We had a number of original songs and some really good ones by you. We also did a couple of songs that are, to me, rock and roll Christmas standards that maybe aren't so known by the typical Christmas audience, such as Christmas Song by Jethro Tull.
Yeah.
Something I grew up with loving, but it's not a household standard.
Yeah, no, it's not. Well, I mean, the genesis of this project, if I could say that now, was I had just done the Smithereens, Christmas with the Smithereens. I'd worked on that record. Not that long before this. And I believe I was also thinking about the Paul Revere and the Raiders Christmas album. But those two things said, every year when we travel and every year around the holidays, I have a collection of music that I listen to. Probably you do too. You know, and one of the songs would be Jethro Tull. One would be, you know, Greg Lake's, you know.
That's one of my favorite Christmas songs ever.
What's the name of that?
The Greg Lake song.
Yeah, what's it called again?
I Believe in Father Christmas.
I Believe in Father Christmas. So there were a few songs that have always been, a number of songs actually, that have always been kind of in our Christmas experience.
Sure.
And so one Christmas morning, we were driving to the families, and I said to Kristen, we really ought to do a Christmas record, and here's the songs we should do. And I believe we wrote them all down as we were driving. And, you know, so that was kind of the start of it. But because I had done some work with the Smithereens was the way I knew that we could do it, you know.
There were a lot of really nice songs that you wrote, and you had mentioned For the Holidays.
Yeah. The thing about the songs that I wrote I realized just today, because I actually picked them up and relearned them recently. Which you have to do from time to time when you have a lot of songs, they don't all, you have to, sometimes you got to go back and go, what chords were those? And what are the lyrics? And, reacquaint yourself with a song. It's almost 10 years now. But I realized that the songs have a significance in this time now, with this particular holiday being one that's a little more strained,
yes, you know,
a little more distant, a little, you know, not, it makes me
strained and strange.
Yeah, and strange, right. But it makes me also, and I'm sure other people, you know, kind of misty for the Christmas past, you know, of where the whole family was together. And a song like For the Holidays was about our childhood Christmases where all our relatives were there who have departed, you know, and I would really love to see them.
Yeah.
You know, and they're gone now. But, you know, that's the song has, you know, it's kind of take me back for the holidays or take me back to the holidays was that kind of an idea.
The other thing about For the Holidays, which for me is very a precious aspect of the song, is I was in the Left Bank at that period in my life. I think it was 2011 to about 2013. So that three-year period, you know, it was my great honor and privilege to be the drummer and vocalist of that band. And, harmony vocalist. And George Cameron sang on this track.
Who has also since departed.
Yeah, George died, I think, 2 years ago. You know, it was wonderful to have him.
It sure was. It sure was. That track was a bit more of a Baroque,
it has
B-A-R-O-Q-U-E, Baroque track, you know, context. I usually think when it's a Baroque kind of song, the Left Bank always comes to mind.
Always.
You know, so it was nice to be able to go, hey, Rick, maybe you could get one of your bandmates.
Maybe I could.
You know, that was kind of cool to be able to pull, you know, reel that one in. We also had a number of other guests, if you recall. That was...
I know where you're going with that.
We worked with our good buddy, Mark Lindsay.
Yeah!
Yeah, Mark Lindsay. In fact, I wrote this song, and I realized that it would be best sung by him.
Who better?
And I had already worked with him prior to that once or twice. I mean, a couple times I was on drums for him. And I hadn't worked with him in a number of years. And I went, our friend Mike Fornatel, who was in the Left Bank also with you.
Give a shout out to Mike Fornatel. I'm sure we'll do an episode. Maybe we'll invite him on because he was an incredible asset to the Left Bank. Just incredible.
Mike actually hooked me up with Mark Lindsay. He was the one who got me into the Mark Lindsay group. When I first worked with him, Mark Lindsay was the former lead singer from Paul Revere and the Raiders from the 60s. And so I just kind of thought, well, you know, we're doing the Christmas album. It might be good to have some guests. And I thought that he would be a good guest. And the song I thought of was... Santa Make Me Good. And I wrote that song when I was writing and I was thinking of somebody like the singer of the song Hungry, like Mark, kind of this, you know, swaggering lead singer guy who's just, you know, he's a little tough, you know. What are you going to do about it, Santa? You know, and just kind of this sneer. I just thought that's the way to approach this song. And he obliged, and that sent us off on a whole thing with working with Mark in the studio and us backing him up and all kinds of fun for years after that.
And boy, did we
learn
a lot
that.
From Mark.
Right, there was that. And, you know, that talking about guests, and we talked about the Smithereens before, the song 2,000 Miles by The Pretenders is a song that, again, it's a song that has been in my playlist, Christmas playlist, for years and years. And I just love that song. I just had this thought that it would be great if we could get Pat and Jim, you know, some of the Smithereens to play it, to join us. The late, great Pat D'Anizio. And now every time I listen to it, man, it's like, you know, having that voice on that track is so special. And then also Jim is playing guitar on it. It's really great that we did that. The Christmas album was done in a very compressed time because, well, as most Christmas albums are done, they're done in the summer.
That's right.
You know,
yeah,
because you got to get them, spring and summer, you got to get them done because if you don't, you're going to have to wait another year. So it was kind of like under the gun to knock this thing out, knock it together and get it done. And that, you know, kind of makes it, has its own energy.
Well, I'd like to talk about my favorite song from the album,
Yeah.
And if I a very influential song for the band, I'll tell you why. Also, if I may also say, since I didn't write it, I can say this because it won't be like an ego thing. It's one of my favorite Christmas songs ever.
Oh, man.
And wow. It's called Christmas Bring Us.
Well, I did write that.
And I think it's the very first Christmas. That was the first song you wrote for the album. I think you had that song before the album.
We did. Well, I had that song. I had been writing that song for a number of years. It took me a few Christmas seasons to put it together, just because it wasn't the most pressing thing. And I was looking at it as a casual thing. Oh, it's Christmas, you know, and I thought about writing a song and I just took my time with it. And then we decided to do it, and we did it as a standalone Christmas song a few years before the album actually came out.
Yes, that's right.
Especially the outro has all these little voices that come in.
Well, yeah, that's a whole nother thing. We'll get to that in a minute. But talk about a Christmas song that isn't corny and really rocks and is psychedelic and is as good as any song that's not a Christmas song. This is it.
I wanted to write something that would stand, that you could listen to, even if it isn't Christmas. Just a song that's just plain good.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have to, it's not like, oh, rocking around the Christmas tree. It's got some.
No way.
You know, but can Christmas truly bring us peace on earth? You know, it's
Which
pretty serious,
too.
Which is
what's good too. About the Greg Lake song, because it's like, it's not a corny, let's all, you know, get happy Christmas. It has an actual message and actually questions things. So this song has this. The other thing about this song, which in retrospect is a real marker for the Gripweeds, it's one of the songs where I really began to play keyboards.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because the keyboard on that is pretty, it's a major part of the song, if I may say.
Yep.
It helps to change the sound of the band somewhat.
You know, you got a point there. That song was probably the precursor to Strange Change Machine. Change Machine, I kind of view as a turning point for us in the studio, I think.
Right.
And I think that Christmas Bring Us was probably the early clue to the new direction.
Yes. And it was the it was the song where I started to think of myself as, I'm very hesitant to call myself a keyboard player, you know, because
Well, you're stuck with that now.
Well, you know, I do what I do on keyboards, and I'm doing pretty well, considering I'm not Rick Wakeman.
He's pretty good.
So let's play the track, Christmas Bring Us.
Okay.
Count up to love, 'cause it's Christmas time of the year.
I love it.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And if I'm not mistaken, there is a video of that, isn't there?
There are two.
Well, we're going to have to get those out.
Yeah, we will. We will.
Let's dig them up. So anything, do you have anything to sum up the Christmas album? I think we're at the end of our time for this episode. Anything that might just sum things up?
Well, all this time later, number one, it still holds up. There are fans of ours who have told me that it's their favorite Gripweeds album.
Oh, wonderful.
And it was done with love, and the originals that we put on there, they stand up with just the other songs, and that, to me, is also really good.
They certainly do. So I guess we're going to wish our listeners, you know, have a really good holiday.
Yeah.
You know, socially distanced, stay safe.
And we have the promise of a great 2021.
It's going to be better.
Couldn't get much worse.
Can't get much worse.
That about does it, right?
Yep.
This podcast can be found at our website, www.gripweeds.com. If you go to the media section, there's a little tab there for podcasts. We will be posting this on Twitter, on Facebook, other social media like Instagram. What you want to do, I think, is you'll want to subscribe to this. Until next time, stay well, stay safe, and keep those vibrations pure and good.
Word.